You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I am your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome back a good friend, Daniel Jacob. Daniel is best known as a conscious channel for The Reconnections. He is a visionary writer, bioenergy body worker, who leads seminars and empowers us to remember. One of his websites, www.reconnections.net, contains a multidimensional galaxy of metaphysical information. His other group, www.thestarchildren.com, focuses on the new kids with metahuman consciousness referred to as star children, indigos, crystals, rainbows, and psychic children, and other. This website offers a haven for self-discovery and exploration. He is the father of two sons, both in their 30s, and lives in the greater Seattle area of Washington. So let's welcome Daniel to the show now and find out what's happening, and I love this part, in the Danielverse.
In the Danielverse.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Hi, Zany. It's so fun to be back with you. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was looking at the date. It's been almost precisely 1 year to the day.
Give
or take a few days. Yeah.
Well, I think we'll just have to call this our yearly checkup.
Yes, doctor.
I was thinking more like you checking up on me.
Well, let's check up on each other.
There you go. I was thinking when you said multi-dimensional gallery of information, I'm thinking, I hope I don't have to pay all the ISP fees for those different dimensions. I've only been getting a bill for one, so.
Well, good. Although it seems that there is kind of this shift, well, not shift, there's kind of a rush to grab as many pieces of the pie as possible, and the corporations presently seem to be winning that battle. But I think that's just part of the process of the old things being falling apart.
Well, yeah. In essence, you know, they're trying to grab hold of what they consider to be valuable, and they're discovering that a lot of the things we've placed most of our emphasis on and made our priority is actually that which gets destroyed and put in disarray the quickest. And many of the things that we've overlooked, like deep friendship, being there for each other, and so on and so forth, are now beginning to emerge as the real gold and silver in the chest of life's experience.
Yeah.
So as people are going more inside and finding out the connection to that voice within, even as I did back in 91 when I began to make connection with my guides, the Reconnections, I began to understand that there's so much more to me than I'd ever looked at. And that's true of the entire world because, you know, each of our universes, each of our world is simply a hall of mirrors for parts of ourself that we hadn't noticed or hadn't been aware of, and all of a sudden here it is before us, and wow, you know, it can really be an eye-opener.
Hmm. No kidding. I listened to one of the radio shows that you did recently. You've been doing quite a few radio shows, it looks like, over the past year or so, haven't you?
Well, you know, I've been blessed. So Gwen Mayer and I did a wonderful had an experience this last year from March to about the end of the year, or actually to just before Thanksgiving. We did a blog talk radio show called Gateways to 2012, and we had an opportunity to do a lot of chatting about the current energies and the energies that are opening up all around us. And then there have been lots of folks like yourself who had heard about the work and had taken interest in what I was doing and invited me to come on, particularly talking about the new kids and so on and so forth. And we've had just some wonderful, wonderful chats. about all sorts of things, because, you know, everything is becoming new, you know.
And yeah.
So there's so much to chat about.
Well, yes. Well, I'm particularly fascinated by the gateways to 2012. That would make a nice segue into, you know, what the energies are now, how they've been shifting, and maybe talking about the ascension process or whatever it is that you would like to share about.
Absolutely. You know, the ascension process has, the guides once said in a transmission that ascension is just not about us going up. It's about that which we have considered to be up, coming back, coming down as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the old ancient alchemical adage of as above, so below, as within, so without, all the various permutations of that same concept, basically pointing us back into the idea of universal oneness, is really playing itself out now when we consider things as visitations by star visitors, what people think of as other planets or even other dimensions, when they talk about connections with gods, goddesses, archetypes, angels, lots of the art, media, movies, and so on, emphasizing the idea of contact with these extraterrestrial, extra-human type situations. And then particularly when we get into various productions that bring us back to the idea of discovering the divinity within ourselves, and that, you know, movies like The Da Vinci Code, for example, when this young girl is taken on a wild goose chase all over Europe and ends up finding out that she's the last living descendant of Jesus Christ. And, and the royalty of all that, you know.
Yeah.
It brought back the idea of when we discover really who we are at all the various levels, it's almost a shock to the system.
Well, especially when so much of who we are has been intentionally concealed and altered or covered up.
Yes, indeed. We have a big market going on right now in talking about conspiracy theories and conspiracies that governments and various individuals have against telling us the full truth about who we are and what we've been doing all this time. And I once brought through a transmission called The Conspiracy of One, where we began to realize that in each of our universes, the primary conspirator is ourselves, the creators of that universe, by first of all telling ourselves that we are many instead of one, that those people out there are separate from me, that I'm either more than or less than anything I see. And so coming to the realization that I've been conspiring against myself so that I would be playing this grand game called separation.
Yeah.
It's a shock when it comes to our realization, and those shocks are being portrayed as everything from weather disruptions to earthquakes to, and boy, earthquakes are right up on the screen right now, and all the way down to what we call ascension symptoms, or I use the phrase global acceleration syndrome. We once were at a convention where we said got gas, you know, GAS, global acceleration syndrome.
Yeah, I do have gas.
We all do at times, where we have this list of symptoms that have become pretty classic up till now, you know, spaciness, tiredness, achiness in the bones and joints, insomnia or the need to sleep a lot, numbness and tingling in various parts of the body, just all kinds of symptoms implying some kind of a new channeling of energy in and around the body. And of course, people will go to the doctors or their various practitioners, and if they can get a diagnosis to fix that, and that seems to suffice for the moment, then I'm all for it. You know, I'm in support of it. you might say the global acceleration syndrome is the diagnosis that has no diagnosis. It's sort of like what you begin believing in about yourself when all the other options for changing the moment are no longer viable. And then you start to say, maybe I'm the one who's changing.
Yeah, definitely. And it seems that this could have something to do with our DNA being altered.
Yeah.
And rewiring as well. Because the body, that, as I understand it, isn't really sufficiently wired to accept frequencies that are beyond its normal range.
Yes, there are bodies, there are universes that are, you know, we might say, wired for 110, and then there are some that
right.
go for 220 or more.
Or more, yes.
And a lot of people are asking about 2012, you know, what is the significance of 2012? And one of the best explanations I heard recently went through with a transmission from Bashar, channeled by Daryl Anka, where he described 2012 as being sort of the breaking point between when the mass consciousness finally discovers, or the waking point of the breaking point, so to speak, when more people are awake than are asleep. Not to say everybody would be awake, but it's sort of like an event horizon where once you get on the other side of this line, there's an emphasis more on positivity than there would be on negativity and doubt, you know. And I thought that was a wonderful emphasis on it because, in truth, we've been told in all the ancient writings that you can never know the day or the time of the exact moment when everything's going to change for you. You can think you do.
Right.
But in most instances, it comes, as they say, as a thief in the night.
Right, right.
And which is good, you know, because I'd rather be, you know, doing what I do right up to the moment of translation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a full experience of what was, and I have a more exciting experience of what's about to be.
I tend to agree with you on that one. And of course, the idea being that that we will know that, and I prefer to think that it will be dramatic enough that I will know that something has happened, and that, you know, I do know how to make a separation between what's happened and what is now.
Yeah. And so everybody will have their own particular version of it, and. For example, we did an article or a transmission in the on reconnections.net called What's Ahead for the Planet Earth. And basically, the focus there was along the line of, they call it like a vase that's been thrown against the wall and broken into a whole multiplicity of shards.
Mm.
And each one of the pieces becomes a universe unto itself.
Wow.
And the wall being an example of whatever that dividing line is, that breaking point, where your commitment to and belief in the linear flow and congruity of the old way, and your breaking open to the possibilities and the endless choices of the new. Instead of believing in the past, the present, and the future, to begin to move beyond the idea of time and time flow, knowing that a lot of these linear pictures are only inventions of the mind, that Stephen Hawking was the one who got us thinking about the idea of remembering the past, and that it's possible to turn around the sequence of things so that future is past and past is future.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can put it in the mix master of time and space and have it come up any way we want. That doesn't necessarily mean the ego is going to be completely in control.
Right.
Because the ego, one of the purposes of the ego was to be the person who had forgotten how the movie came out, so that's the part of the oneself that gets to be surprised. You know, so what they say, why does God continually make different kinds of universes so that he can fragment off a portion of him, herself, that doesn't yet know how the story plot ends, so we get to be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. One of the things that you were talking about on the radio show that I was listening to was material about the male and female energies within us uniting.
Yeah.
Would you care to share about that a little bit?
You bet. You know, one of the big topics right now is this whole idea of shamanic androgyny. Mm-hmm. Within the spiritual realm, you know, the shamanic beings of the ancient tribes, many of them were well known as being carriers of both the positive and negative charge, carriers of both the masculine and feminine, the active and the passive. And we even have this diagnosis now in our psychological spectrum called bipolar,
mm-hmm.
in which you know, there are certain individuals who no longer adhere to simply one side of the spectrum, being this or that. They actually are beginning to energetically and experientially be both this and that and everything. There, you might call them the test pilots for the new way.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ancient shamanic tribes and traditions, it was not unusual for individuals to carry within them what they called the Berdosh factor, or the androgyny, that enabled them to at least feel into both sides of the gender spectrum, so that you would potentially be able to feel, a man could feel another man like a woman does,
mm-hmm.
and a woman could feel another woman like a man does, not necessarily with the idea of doing anything about it unless you chose to.
Right, right.
But the idea of having that accessibility to that viewpoint and to have those kinds of, you might say, energetic perspectives available in your sensory system.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have all kinds of topics that come forward now about the homosexuality and even what they call transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Where individuals born in the body represented by one gender actually choose to have themselves surgically altered because they feel more of a sense of identification with the opposite gender than they do with the ones that their body features.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And so the energies on the planet are, you know, they're changing places, and they're changing perspectives, and the humans who are sensitive are changing right along with them, just so that we can begin to see things. We can look at this whole life experience of 3D like the multidimensional crystal it actually is and was meant
mm-hmm.
to be.
Do you notice people gaining in sensitivity and empathy who are experiencing an accelerated process? You know, being able, well, as you just talked about that, being able to feel the other as oneself. I noticed
yes.
that increasing in myself, heightened senses, definitely increased empathy, which triggers emotional responses often.
Indeed, indeed. And then, of course, even the reactivity, when you have people who are reactive to those expressions, like those who are anti-homosexual right now or anti-transgender, mm-hmm. They react only because of the fear mm-hmm. of the possibility that they might have to deal with more than their sensory system is able to handle. So they innately go the other direction. And yet even with that kind of display of preference and even some of the more passionate, vehement opposition, all that we're really doing is further establishing the idea that these changes are happening. And that they're producing results, you know. And
mm-hmm.
some people who are just as sympathetic and compassionate about the folks who are having some questions about who they are and what they are, there's just as many people who are trying to close the door and run from it, which just mm-hmm. further establishes the point. It's happening.
Mm. Interesting.
So we had a great, 2-hour discussion on Golden Hawk's show with Robert Sabella, who's a really cool metaphysician friend of mine up in Vancouver, BC, and Goldenhawk and myself. We wanted to have the genders represented, and was interesting that all three of us had had experiences with, within ourselves and personally, these various shifts in attitudes and awarenesses, not necessarily reflective of our preferences for sexual expression, but just simply our awarenesses and our shifts in perspective as we grow and expand into these new spiritual realms. So all three of us had had those experiences, and it was just a matter of putting it all together and saying, what do we think this is going to mean, not only for the individuals, but for society? And we could easily see that 2 hours was not nearly enough, so we're probably going to be doing more soon.
Oh, good. Well, you know, you're quite familiar with my own sexual history from my book.
Oh, yes. You've got a great story, by the way. I love that book.
Thank you. Tales of a Zany Mystic, available at Amazon.com. I got to get a plug in once in a blue moon. But
well, and if they haven't read it, I would say read it. It is a wonderful and zany journey, let me tell you.
Thank you. And I, as you know, I'm, what's the word, favorably inclined, or shall we say I'm familiar with, the gay world, having gone through 30 or 40 years of that experience myself, and
yes,
all the torment and denial and angst and pain, and then gradual self-acceptance, and then immersing myself in it and coming out the other side with a different view of life.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's quite a wonderful experience. And, you know, though I don't have any relationships in the moment, and I don't pursue any kind of contacts, and now being 59 and all that, I'm more interested in the inner processes than the outer ones, but I treasure those experiences, and
you have that backlog to draw on when you're doing your inner work now.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that helps me as well with the meeting of the feminine and masculine sides within. So it's really been a great boost, even though it was quite a, it seemed like quite a, what do you call it, a, well, a thing that you don't want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's been quite a fun house ride. Fun ride.
Yes. So,
but, you know, those are the courageous people. You know, you can always tell the pioneers because they're the ones with the arrows in their back. And those who've had to go through those kinds of experiences just to be true to their own inner voice are going to be richer for it in soul and in message, in life message.
Mm-hmm.
And as the doorways open more and more to having those life messages told, and as people become more open to understanding that we fall in love with the soul of an individual, that plumbing is only just a small part of that whole picture.
Yes.
That there are, it's really a dance of souls that perhaps have been together throughout many lifetimes and have put on and taken off bodies like so many overcoats.
Yes, and, yes, absolutely.
That we no longer count that as being the primary element. It's just it's a piece of the picture, and certainly not to be completely denied, but it isn't the whole thing by any stretch. Now, the kids, on the other hand, who are coming in now, are really scaling those walls with very little effort. I know that there are some kids who aren't quite completely awake to their metahuman roots and their abilities, who may be still going through some suffering over it. But for the most part, when I talk to it seems that my age group of people who are drawn to me and my message, they're anywhere from 16 to 35.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're very expressive and very, very willing to share and to be shared with.
Mm-hmm.
And they scale those fences, you know, they say, we're not heterosexual, we're not bisexual, we're trisexual, which means if it's sexual, we're going to try it.
Bravo.
And there's really very little problem, you know, for them to, you know, to experiment and not have to feel like one experiment or even a group of experiments or even a year of experiments would be a defining factor one way or the other. It's like, mm-hmm. this is where I am now, but I may not be here for the rest of my life. I'm just doing it day by day.
Right, exactly.
Which is how they're wired. You know, that's how the metahuman being must function if we're going to make it through the eye of the needle and on to the next dimensions.
Yes, yes. And maybe you could address that aspect of what the process that we're going through, whether it's in today or tomorrow or 2011 or 2012 or 13, the eye of the needle and moving into another dimension. That definitely seems to be a process that we're headed towards, yes?
Yeah, and when we think of, you know, like the Ark, you know, where everybody got on two by two,
mm-hmm.
and the whole emphasis after that big disruption and destruction and reconstruction was everything was in two. So it was like, you might say, the reestablishment of a dualistic kind of idea of up and down and hot and cold and this and that and me and you. Instead of hot and cold, it would be hot as cold. It would be me as you. It would be you as me.
Mm-hmm.
There is, for example, in the Zanyverse, there is a version of Daniel. There is the me that is you.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the Danielverse, there is the you that is me. And
mm-hmm.
it's all perceptual.
Mm-hmm.
At those levels, we're not even certain from the standpoint of physics that the actual, or the what someone like to say is the objective reality even exists,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because everything is in motion,
mm-hmm.
and everything is deeply affected by the eye that observes it. The eye that observes it actually becomes the arbiter of how it's viewed and how it's established as reality.
Yeah.
Or when we go back to the book of Genesis, where all the animals were created and the animals were paraded past Adam, and God said, you know, go ahead and name the animals, and whatever you call the animals, that's what they'll be. And so the animals were paraded past him. And then you might say during these times of reestablishment of a oneness paradigm instead of a dualism.
Right.
We all get to name our animals, and we all have to start out with the idea of this is me, the giraffe. This is me, the monkey. This is me,
mm-hmm.
the bird. This is
mm-hmm.
this is the me that is the panther or the stallion. I want to meet me, the stallion, by the way, but that's another story entirely.
We can probably do a whole show about that one, huh?
Yes, we can do a whole story. Daniel. But when we go through the eye of the needle, you know, there's just one eye in that needle, just like there's a third eye in the middle of our forehead, and the images of the two eyes come together and create that unified vision of the coming together of the dualistic, the
mm-hmm.
polarities into a oneness
mm-hmm.
interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
The more an individual is able to see and interpret his or her reality as a reflection of self, the more personalized everything becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the triangle aspect. You know, this triangular, the triad has always been a key figure, a key symbol in the third dimension, where we talk about the two polarities coming together at the tip or the apex, being that is the unity of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And each unity of the two presents its own combination, its own recipe of beingness, so that there might be a gender male who has these certain personality characteristics, gender female that has these certain personality characteristics that don't necessarily match what we think of as female or male.
Mm-hmm.
And it all comes down to the idea that it's now you, you know, it's a you-niverse. and it all looks like you. So we, you know, across the years when we get together in discussion groups, we play with words. We have such fun playing with words.
Well, one thing that it seems to be clear from our experiences and from what you're saying is that those who are remaining in judgment, duality, and anger and hatred are resisting some aspect of themselves that they cannot accept or can't see or let up. Because it seems like judgment is such a waste of energy, and it's just a distortion of emotions.
Well, you could probably say that if you were completely convinced in the oneness paradigm. I can't even say after all these years of working with oneness and the idea of multidimensionality, many as one and one as many, that I'm completely converted to it. I mean, there are parts of me that I discover all the time that are willing, not willing, but insistent on projecting out shadows on somebody else and saying,
yeah,
no, that's not me. That's him. That's him. That's his problem. He's got to work that through.
Yeah.
And then when I catch myself doing it, I just go, ooh, touche, you know? You made me look at my shadow. Good job, friend. You did a good job. You know,
yeah.
People will come up and say, are you putting me on? And I'm going, yes, I'm wearing you. I'm a part of you that you didn't know you had. You know, and it's like, it's really quite an adventure. And when they catch us off guard, you know, when somebody's so unusual, so outside the scope of our concept of ourself, comes around the corner, and all of a sudden it's like, ah! You know, you take a look, and then suddenly you start to begin to integrate. You begin to see yourself with what we call soft eyes, which are the eyes of you as me and me as you, rather than, you know, you are you and I am I and neither the twain shall meet.
Mm.
Oh, I'm sorry, friend, but actually, if you have that attitude, we're going to keep meeting and keep meeting until you can finally chew me up and swallow me and make me part of your wholeness, because I'm here, and I'm not going away. I may hide for a while, but I'll be back, as Arnold Schwarzenegger said in the movie, I'll be back.
True, true, true.
But, you know, needing another 70 years to work through something is nothing in the eyes of the multiverse. It's like, oh, you need another 70? Fine. It's like an extension on your mortgage loan. Yeah, give him another 70 years. And then we'll come back and see if he can accept that. And it's like, sure, why not? In eternity, that's just the blink of an eye.
Right.
But isn't it interesting, you know, with our human minds and our regular orientation, to try and you know, really see things from that way? I had a woman ask me in a phone reading the other day. She said, now, ask the reconnections when it is that I'm going to wake up. And the guide said, well, you're already awake. And she said, well, I don't feel awake. And the answer to the idea is, you're not considered awake or enlightened when you have all the answers. You're considered awake and enlightened when you start asking the right questions, when you're asking the questions. Being in the question and enjoying the question for what it is one big piece of the life experience. Don't expect us to just have a vending machine and push a button and out comes an answer. There'd be no fun to that. You know, it's a process, and that's what we're in. When we get enlightened, you know, well, somebody once said, after enlightenment, the laundry.
Yeah.
It's not like everything's going to fold up and go away. It's just like we're going to be content with letting it all be what it is, rather than trying to fight it or chase it or capture it or own it, you know.
Yeah. Yep, I experience it on a daily basis, and I have to do my dishes and cook food.
Are you still living up on your mountain? It seems to me you were living somewhere kind of away from the madding crowd.
Yes, I'm away from the madding crowds. I'm up in the Sierra Nevadas.
Yes, you're up on the mountain at times, but you do come down and fraternize with us humans too.
Yes, I like to do that just to remind myself that everything is going according to plan.
So we have this this regular alchemical process, and you know, of course, alchemy is another fascinating study. The reconnection site is called Studies in Personal Alchemy, and people who haven't had exposure to the world to the word don't understand that, you know, way back when the sorcerers and the magicians were working their wonders, there was this field of research where men were trying to convert base metals into gold, and that was the commercial side of alchemy. And it was because of that that the church and the government would allow these guys to continue their experimentation, because there was a profit motive and they couldn't actually see anything that could do any harm to the powers that be. So they said, gee, if you can do that, then we're more than happy to let you just don't change anything seriously, you know, or shake the balance of power, otherwise we're going to have to take you out. But, you know, the word alchemy being the old root word for our modern chemistry, but it all has to do with transformation. And even back then, they knew that the very core of transformation is perception and the inner soul. They were smart enough even then to know that it wasn't about the gold, or it wasn't about just the precious metals, it was, even the base metals, that it had more to do with a shift of perspective and a shift of attitude. And as we begin to mix and mingle energies, the United States of America as an experiment in government and in society is, you might say, one of the big alchemical experiments of the ages. Because we are supposed to be the melting pot where all these various elements are put to mix and mingle, and it becomes our challenge not to create everyone as being the same element, but to create a way of living, a way of functioning, so that we honor all the various identities of those elements and make it possible for them to live in harmony without stepping on each other's toes. The big challenge, of course, once again, is that idea of the king and the church wanting to maintain their sense of separation, but the church wanting to come in and still dictate, you know, the spiritual principles by which that, you know, everything is supposed to happen. Even though we talk about it in our society, about the separation of church and state, everywhere we turn, we see that whole lack of separation of church and state as being the big stumbling block for this great experiment working. You know, everybody wants to influence and have everybody go the way they believe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than enjoying, you know, the diversity and the incredible freedom to be who, to let everybody be who they really want to be, so that we can get our true reflections and the diversity that we deserve as humans.
Well, it seems ironic that one of the biggest churches in the world, the Catholic Church, represented by the Pope, he's made a statement about the need to stamp out homosexuality with the urgency that we are concerned about preserving the rainforest. And it's ironic that that within the church it seems to be quite a problem with incest and you know, pedophilia.
Well, and I was going to say that he better watch out about stamping out homosexuality. He's not going to have any priesthood. not to say that they're all homosexuals, but there's certainly a lot of people historically who have gone into celibate lifestyles in order to escape the inner urgings that they were never able to embrace or integrate.
That's right.
And so then it comes out at times. Spontaneously, and everybody's baffled as to where it comes from. But really, it's, you know, you have to always search your motivations about how you're using your religion and why you're using it. in your life so that you don't use it as a shield. Carl Jung was famous for saying religion is sometimes a shield against a religious experience or a spiritual experience. It's by saying, I believe this, you're closing the door on anything else you could believe if you were to open your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is it they say about an open mind like a parachute?
Yeah, it only works when open.
Yeah. And I'm glad you remembered the other half of that one. Oh, God. I know you know that life seems to be increasingly out of balance and that this is all part of a process that we're going through.
Yeah.
That we've created. I just was doing some research on the Hopis, referring to this as Kleanaskatsi, which is also a film by Godfrey Reggio, a trilogy of films about life out of balance. Do you feel that there's a course correction for the bulk of for all of us coming to shift the balance in another direction?
Absolutely. I think it's happening in many ways. And in many other ways, we could say that some of the out of balanceness that we observe is, in essence, some course corrections that are already taking place. Sometimes I'll look and see how things are shaking down politically or economically, and I'll say, I'll go to the guides and I'll go, how can this be happening? And they go, things are not always what they appear.
Yeah.
And don't draw conclusions on the way things are going now, because things will only go a certain way long enough until the will and the benefit of the one self of all of us has been satisfied. And then just as quickly as dominance can be given to something, it can also be taken away. And so we're going to see lots of course corrections and things that look very out of balance, but actually they're going to be a rebalancing in certain ways, some of them conservative, some of them very liberal. It all depends on the time and the particular place, but there's going to be some great, huge course corrections, and that's why it's so important for all of us not to attach ourselves to any one philosophy or way of looking at things, because when it comes right down to it, every position on the experiential or belief spectrum could be justified if it were looked at from a particular perspective. The multiverse has a universe. The multiverse being, like a huge warehouse of potential possible universes. In the multiverse, there's a universe which honors every belief imaginable and then some, which means that we can be in one universe where this particular lifestyle, this particular belief is being honored, and then in the next moment be flipped over into another one where there's a completely different operation is going on. And if we're tied to some kind of a expectation of a particular linear sequence, we're not going to be able to make the shift necessary from one universe to another. It's like, the Starship Enterprise was in the Star Trek series. It had the mandate to explore and maybe support from time to time, but never interfere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If there are those of us who are in this journey where we are citizens of the multiverse, then we no longer will be wanting to dedicate ourselves to any particular outcome as much as we'll want to observe and try and neutralize judgments and recriminations against various viewpoints, knowing that there will always be a universe for every viewpoint to establish it and make it right, all the way up to the point where we would actually have artifacts and historical instruments in that universe that will be discovered, that will establish those facts. And you say, my gosh, you mean to tell me that it is possible for up to be down and for black to be white? And absolutely, in the multiverse,
yeah,
there's a universe where each and every belief can be honored and completely made manifest. And that's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about that for 3 days, Lance.
Yeah. Well,
how to have a mindset that's so flexible and so pliable that you don't get completely shattered by moving from one universal context to another and saying, you know, that's no longer true here. We're in a different universe now.
Yes, yeah.
That's a whole new thing, and that's we're kind of quite a ways away from that right now.
Yeah.
People would still be saying, now, what on earth? Where did that go? How did this all happen? And we go, it's not important for you to understand how it happened. What it is important for you to allow that it is and to flow with it.
Yeah. Kind of like the green tree bending in the wind and the dry, brittle one breaking like a twig.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the willows and the oaks and all the different, you know, sometimes it's important to be an oak. Sometimes it's important to be a willow. And it just depends on the universe where you are at that point in time. And if any of us are going to be like oaks, unshakable, then let's allow our unshakability to be centered around things like... there's no such thing as good or bad. There just is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that I'm a child of the multiverse, and that whoever I am, whatever I end up being, I'm beautiful. You know,
mm-hmm.
Some of those universal joints, the kind of things that would help you be able to adapt in any environment.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of firm foundations and oaks that we want to be. But if we come into the kind of established, I believe that this is wrong and this is right, and I believe in truth, what is truth just depends
right.
on which universe you're in at the moment.
Right.
Now, you know, the black and whiters out there are just going, saying, oh, there's that new age crap. You're able to justify anything with your mind.
Right.
I'm going, it isn't my mind that justifies it. You know, it's just in and of itself. It's my
right.
mind that tends to put it in little boxes, and I'm hoping to open my boxes up.
Yeah.
So the wind can blow through, you know. Does that make me an airhead? Well, perhaps. I did grow up in California, so.
Well, we have a reputation for that here, don't we? Well, you know, it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. Well, you know, the idea of being able to be, you know, in alchemy, they have this phrase called the philosopher's stone.
Uh-huh.
And it's supposed to be the goal and the quest of every alchemist. And when it comes right down to it, the nature of the philosopher's stone is it's an element which is called a universal catalyst. And when you apply the philosopher's stone to any situation, it can join together any two conflicting ideas into something that can harmonize with each other. In other words, it helps catalyze them into some kind of a useful, harmonious dance, you know. So if I could develop within myself the philosopher's stone so that wherever I go, I season the place into such a place where even the saltiest of environment can be made palatable, where even the most strident noises can turn into music, where even the most desperate situations can find their place of hope, then I believe that I've become a very successful effective alchemist, which is the true alchemy of the spirit.
Do you find yourself attracting experiences to you because of that desire to be an alchemist that you're having to transform and transmute?
Absolutely. And it all takes place inside me. It's not so much the situation itself that needs to be transmuted, but rather
right.
the interpretation of the situation.
Right, right, right.
And so oftentimes, just in how I behave toward the various members of, like if there's a conflict or something, to be able to not muddy the thing up with my own prejudices and biases,
mm-hmm.
but just simply enter the room with the idea that as citizens of the multiverse, every place we all come from is a good place and a right place. Every goal we have is a good goal and the right goal. Even if it involves something violent or strange, it's the only reason it's violent and strange is because we're short on our ability to be able to catalyze and find a solution that doesn't involve force or intense opposition.
Okay.
But when we come in with the proper attitude, the energy raises in the room, and as the energy raises, so do our amount of possibilities for resolution of conflict. So we say ascension is not necessarily a matter of altitude. Sometimes it's a matter of attitude.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yes, and the guides have lots of little phrases, little zingy ones that they've given me over the years. I remember saying to the guides, you know, one time I was concerned because I was channeling what I thought at the time might have been evil forces. You know, how did I know? I was opening myself up to this new information. I was saying, what if over the course of time, I'm doing all this channeling, I happen to lose myself in the process.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking that maybe the guides were going to come for me and say, don't worry, we'll remind you who you are, we'll hang on to you. But instead, the host guide into the system, who is an alchemist named Belshazzar, he simply said, well, there would be an upside to that. If you lost yourself, then you wouldn't be here to know that you're gone. And then I could hear him in the background kind of laughing. You know, because sometimes the very question itself reveals our adherence to limitation thinking. And once we see it in the light of that, you know, everything sort of evaporates. The fears,
yeah.
the concerns,
yeah.
the hesitancies. But first it has to come out into the light and we have to own it, you know. So my dear friend who said, can you ask the guides when I'm going to wake up? Say, don't you understand the very fact that you're asking that question means you're awake?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the idea of when is sort of irrelevant to the picture. The idea is you're in process now, which is a process of awakening. You know, the fact that your human frame doesn't carry all of the bits of information you might want at a moment's notice doesn't mean anything other than the fact that you've elected to walk into this particular movie instead of the one that's playing down the hall.
Yeah, interesting. What's the most memorable shift that you've experienced personally this last year since we've, you know, haven't spoken for a year? What's something that you really consider to be a paradigm shifter for yourself?
Well, one of the huge paradigm shifts for me has been in the area of work and business. For years and years, I was, I've had a dear friend, Nina, who's been kind of a helpmeet and a supporter and a cheerleader, and she made her living for a good deal of the time working in the area of insurance, and she's done that for over 30 years, and some doorways opened up for us this year, around April or May of last year, and I felt a calling to get involved with one particular aspect of her insurance work that involved working with uninsured people and people through DSHS and a particular dental plan that she's involved with, and one that she actually created about 8 years ago for AIDS patients. And it provided some necessary services that were just not available, and she just made it manifest out of thin air. And then it had been sitting dormant for quite a while. And it seemed like this year I began to see with my, you know, advancing age myself, I'm 60 or 59. We know that we're not the young spunk sprites that we once were.
I would be using
my mind more than my body, and that the body work itself that had been the major focus of my life was going to be scaled back. I always like to keep my hands in it, but it had been scaled back. So I jumped aboard the train, and we've been working together on some projects relating to what you might think is the purest form of insurance reform.
Huh.
And, I've been put in environments and learned things about business and about social work this year that have both excited and challenged me. And I can see all kinds of new doorways opening up for us to be able to share not only the reconnections work, the core of the reconnections work, but some of the visions that have been set forth by President Obama in attitude and desire and connections to people who are struggling to find themselves in an economic landscape that's been blown apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
we've been doing a lot of that work, and I would say that's turned my world around. I've been very, very involved with that. A lot of people have noticed I haven't done as much writing in newsletters and stuff, and that's because I've been working on this project. And I must say that it's been a very, very dynamic force for me. And after all these years of knowing Nina and watching her work and watching the joy she's had in doing this, and to be able to do a bit of it, not certainly to the degree that she's done it, but to integrate a bit of what I do with what she's done has brought us closer together.
Well, wonderful. Daniel, we have to segue out.
That's us. We were just pretty much at the end of that recounting anyway. This has been wonderful. I hope at some point, whether it's a year or two or whenever we do it again, I'll have lots more to tell you.
Wonderful. And you can be found at www.thereconnections.net. Isn't that right?
Well, it would be www.reconnections.net.
Okay.
And also
wonderful.
www.thestarchildren.com. Got two sites out there.
Fantastic. Daniel, thanks again. And
thank you, Lance. It's always wonderful to come into the zany world.
Wonderful to come into the Danielverse. Take care, and thanks again.
All right, night.
All right. Good night, everybody.